The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. I have a real treat for you today. It's a guest that I am so excited about that I can barely contain myself. Okay, let me tell you who it is. Thomas Mayer is a journalist, author, and producer. His latest book, Masters of Sex: The Life and Times of William Masters and Virginia Johnson, the couple who taught America how to love, is the basis for the Golden Globe-nominated drama series, Masters of Sex, which premiered on Showtime in 2013 and stars Michael Sheen and Lizzie Kaplan. He is also the author of New House, All the Glitter, Power, and Glory of America's Richest Media Empire and the Secretive Man Behind It, The Kennedys, America's Emerald Kings, and Dr. Spock, An American Life, which was selected as one of the top 10 nonfiction books of 1998 by the Boston Globe and as a notable book of the year by the New York Times. Mayer has been a reporter for Newsday since 1984, and in 2002, he won the world's top investigative prize from the International Consortium of Investigative Reporting for a series about the deadly exploitation of immigrant workers. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Thomas.
Thank you so much for having me, Tristan.
I want to do a little background for those perhaps younger people who may not know who Masters and Johnson were, although I feel like if you listen to my show, you've got to know who Masters and Johnson are. Mm-hmm. Dr. William H. Masters and Virginia E. Johnson are really pioneers in the field of sexology. During a partnership that lasted more than 40 years, they conducted unprecedented research in human sexuality. Their two books, Human Sexual Response and Human Sexual Inadequacy, are the basis for much of our understanding of orgasmic response, sexual dysfunction, and sex therapy today. But the thing about this book is, yes, it is a thorough and complex biography of these two incredible people, but it's also a page-turner with enough sex, drama, scandal, infidelity, intrigue, and big personalities to keep you hooked. It's like the fastest 400 pages I've ever read in my entire life because I just like couldn't get enough of the story. I guess I want to start at the beginning and say, what drew you to write their biography? Like, why them and why you?
Well, as you mentioned, I'm a reporter for Newsday. And almost 20 years ago, I was asked quite on the fly by one of the editors at Newsday to try to get an interview with Dr. William Masters on the day that he was retiring. And I did. I spoke to him for about a half hour, 45 minutes. And when I got off the phone, I wrote a short story for Newsday. And at the time, I was writing a book about Dr. Spock, the baby doctor that you had mentioned before. But it stuck with me. a story of a man and a woman, in this case, Masters and Johnson, Virginia Johnson, studying love and sex that they were not married. Then they get married. They're married for 20 years. They become world famous. Then they divorce, and nobody understands why. And it's something that stuck with me for quite a while. So I finished the Spock book. I immediately went into a book about the Kennedys. But once I finished that, I came back. It was almost 10 years later. And I came back to the idea, which still stayed in my mind. And by that point, Masters had died. But Virginia Johnson, after a couple of false starts, I convinced her to cooperate for the biography. And once she started talking, she had never spoken really at all about their private life in the past. But at that point, she was ready to talk. She was she was 80 years old. She had thought about writing her own life story, but never really was going to do it. And so she agreed to talk. Ironically, she knew Dr. Spock's wife, and she had read my Spock book. So she was convinced that, you know, I would be the one to share their story. And then I wound up getting the cooperation of Masters' family. He had written his own memoir, which wasn't particularly insightful, but it had a lot of facts and some of the backstory of his youth that kind of explained who and what he was. And so between all of those different factors and then speaking to all the people that work with Masters and Johnson, some of the patients and such, I was able to put together the story. It was loads of fun to do.
Now, they weren't just notoriously private. They were infamously secretive, not just about their work, but about their private lives. And so did the first time you meet Virginia Johnson, did you guys just like hit it off and she said, oh, this is the one?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the first conversation went for 4 hours with Virginia Johnson. And the very first scene in the book about how she lost her virginity was the result of that initial conversation, believe it or not. You know, there were certain questions that I wanted to know the answer to. And I made a point of, particularly in the first few interviews with her, to make sure I got that, to understand where both of them were coming from. And in the case of Virginia Johnson, it was a woman who was very much kind of like the old Pygmalion story or, you know, My Fair Lady. In other words, she was a woman who was twice divorced, age 32, going back to school when she met Dr. Master. She was getting a job filling out insurance forms as a secretary at the medical school. And it was just at that point that Masters, who was an OBGYN, who was kind of, if you will, the sharpest blade on the faculty. He was, he was like the top doctor at Washington University in St. Louis in the field of OBGYN. And he was determined to do a study that would document human sexuality. It was kind of the holy grail for him. He felt strongly that if he was to do this successfully, that he would win a Nobel Prize for doing no less than documenting how the human species progresses, literally how it all works. And he was very aware that Kinsey, who had preceded their studies, Alfred Kinsey, was not a doctor. He was not a medical doctor. And his studies were essentially surveys of people's attitudes and views about sexuality. But as we all know, people lie about sex. And he felt, Masters felt, as a scientist, that the only way to do this properly was to essentially document how the body responded during sex, primarily so that he could come up with answers and solutions for those married couples primarily who would come to him as a doctor seeking answers. And he felt that medicine was very ill-equipped to give those answers because they really had not studied the subject. It was considered nitroglycerin. And so they were very secretive because Masters and Johnson, but particularly Masters, realized that he was risking his career, his reputation, his livelihood, that he was playing with nitroglycerin. And so for that reason, they were particularly secretive from the very beginning, and it just carried through the next 25 years of their work together.
Now, you mentioned his research at Washington University in St. Louis. What amazed me about your storytelling is that it seems like they enjoyed funding and free rein to do this research without very much oversight at all, which seems remarkable in this day and age. But then it all came to an end at kind of a critical turning point when Bill Masters began presenting their research to medical students and people started freaking out about what they were doing. Like, you're actually yes. having people have sex in the lab and you're measuring, right. you know, their heart rate. And but how do you think before that they managed to fly under the radar for so long?
Well, because Bill Masters' reputation was as the top doctor for OBGYN. So, you know, he, for instance, would deliver the babies of the police chief, as an example, in St. Louis. He also brought in a fair amount of dollars to the medical school and the hospital as a doctor to whom a lot of patients were attracted because of his competency. He was also a doctor who was involved in the whole study of fertility. In many ways, that's how he begins as well. First through fertility studies. And he, the desire to have children for married couples who are having difficulty conceiving, this was a major part of the whole dynamic of his work. He was dealing, as I mentioned, with married couples. And the problems in the bedroom were the type of things that he felt that medicine should get involved with. That, you know, usually people would go to a Freudian trained therapist, or maybe go to a priest, rabbi, or a minister seeking answers for their problems in the bedroom. But it was really, he felt that it was the role of medicine, the proper role of medicine, to get involved in all of this. And so that's where he's really coming from with this. He's very determined that medicine should be the primary actor in the whole questions about sexuality.
Okay, well, we have a lot more to dig into, but we've got to take our first break and hear from our fantastic sponsors, including Good Vibrations. Good Vibrations is my presenting sponsor, and they are so good to me. And so, listeners out there, you must be good to them in return. Go to goodvibes.com, use coupon code Tristan for 15% off your order. Stay with us. We are going to continue to talk to Thomas Mayer about Masters and Johnson, this incredible biography, which was turned into this Showtime series. So we've got a lot more to talk about. Stay with us.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423. Or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today we're talking with Thomas Mayer, the author of Masters of Sex, which is this definitive biography of the legendary sexologists Masters and Johnson. So Thomas, there isn't exactly a crystal clear picture of how their sexual relationship began, but we know that Masters and Johnson did have a sexual relationship before they were publicly out about being involved, before they got married. And according to Virginia Johnson, it was a condition of her job as his assistant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, would you characterize it at any point as non-consensual? What do you make of how this sex started between them?
Well, everything between Bill and Virginia is very complicated, but undoubtedly, certainly by today's standards, it was nothing less than sexual harassment, in the sense that, in a very sophisticated way, what Masters said after a few months of work and observing sexuality in the lab, observing the volunteers that were in part of their study in the lab, you know, bear in mind, it was almost like that old Frankenstein movie where, you know, Dr. Frankenstein's in the lab and you see all these zaps of electrical energy in the lab, and there was, in a somewhat similar way, these zaps of sexual energy that was in their lab. And Masters said to Virginia that he felt that that he worried about transference. It's a Freudian term in which the patient somehow falls in love with the therapist or whatever. And using this idea of transference, he said it was best that he felt to channel this energy that was in their lab, that they should have sex among themselves. You know, when it was first mentioned to me, it was mentioned to me by one of their associates, and I was flabbergasted by it. I knew, obviously, that they had had an affair prior to getting married, and that had been going on for a while before they did get married. But I didn't realize it was that early on in the working relationship and that it was under those circumstances, which really constitute an equation for Virginia, that either you have sex with me or you'll not have a job. And that's basically what Masters was telling her. And once that was told to me by an associate, when I was in St. Louis, I interviewed Virginia Johnson towards the end of the research in her apartment, and we went through a number of different issues, and that was certainly one of them. And she was profoundly uncomfortable about the whole thing, but she did indeed acknowledge that in fact, she's the one who said, he said it was transference. And it was kind of playing on the research and the readings that Virginia Johnson was doing about Freud. She was the one who was doing a lot of the outside reading that would inform their therapy. So, it was, in other words, it was kind of using the information that she was acquiring and kind of like twisting it so that he could have sex with her. And now, to what extent it was consensual is, on the face of it, it was not. But there are a number of people who were in their world who also felt that Virginia Johnson always wanted to have an affair with Dr. Masters, that she always had her eye on him. I was convinced through my reporting that the story was not one or the other, but kind of a very, very complicated mix of all those factors together. But undoubtedly, at the outset, it's outrageous, certainly by today's standards, to realize that he was asking her, or basically suggesting that that she should have sex with him in order to maintain her job with him.
But yet, the affair goes on for a really long time. And at any point, do you think there's any possibility that Bill Masters, his wife Libby, and Virginia Johnson all had an agreement or an arrangement that just no one would cop to in the end? Did that ever cross your mind?
Oh, yes. I think that that goes on for several years, actually. Masters and Johnson started working together in early 1957. They didn't get married until 1970. So for the better part of that year, those years, 12 years of 14, 13 years, they definitely had a very complicated relationship in which Bill and Virginia had an ongoing sexual relationship, sometimes in an apartment that they kept, sometimes at Virginia's home. But then Bill would go home to the suburbs to his life with Libby Masters and their two children. And, you know, he would be the proper doctor, the Republican doctor, you know, one who was kind of a pillar of the community. Yet back in the lab, he was, you know, running this kind of secretive sex study, and he was having an affair with his main associate, Virginia Johnson.
And so when Bill does finally divorce his wife and marries Virginia, that whole time period seems very muddled. Like, it's not exactly clear why they got married. What is your opinion of that?
Well, it is. It's a very complicated story. They definitely had an ongoing sexual relationship, but they also had a real love affair. There's no doubt about that in my mind, that they were fascinated with one another. And one of the major appeals of doing the book for me was that the fact that ultimately Johnson, Virginia Johnson, gains parity with Masters. In fact, there are people who will argue that Bill Masters' greatest sign of love for Virginia Johnson was allowing the fact that they shared a byline. Their very first book and all of their work together, they shared a byline together.
She didn't have academic or medical credentials. She didn't even have her bachelor's degree.
Right, exactly. And she was properly given credit on the dint of her creative ideas, the dint of her work, her insights into what makes human beings tick. She was really the one who came up with their therapy that winds up becoming the basis for the modern sex clinic industry that hospitals and clinics all around the world have adopted and have continued to use even to this day. So her contributions were quite considerable. But, you know, why they got married had as much to do with keeping the brand of Masters and Johnson. When they got married, they were on the cover of Time magazine that same year. And so Masters realized that Virginia Johnson had met a man who was one of their patrons, a guy who ran a perfume company, a very wealthy man here in New York, who was he funded their research to try to find out the relationship of smell and sexuality and feeling. You know, this was a guy whose company put the lemon in Lemon Pledge and was, you know, he was a perfume and fragrance owner of a company, you know, that dealt with this type of stuff. And so he felt that if Masters and Johnson somehow found the key to sexuality, the link between scent and smell and sexuality, that he would be first in line to capitalize on that. But as part of that relationship, he became this guy, the scent, fragrance, and the perfume guy. He winds up having an affair with Virginia Johnson, and he winds up suggesting to her that he'll divorce his wife to get married to Virginia Johnson, and she'll move to New York, and it's a very tempting offer to Virginia Johnson. And when Bill Masters finds out that she's having an affair with one of his patrons and that she's going to go off and leave and break up the partnership that's now on the cover of Time magazine, he ultimately decides, he finally decides, well, I will break up with my wife and I will marry you. And it becomes a marriage of convenience, of business, of power, of money, as much as love. And it's a very complicated equation.
Yes, and it continues to get even more complicated after they get married. Okay, we're going to take another break. One thing that's not complicated is lube, and Astroglide has a great new product in their line, the Sensitive Skin Gel. It's everything you love about their gel formula, but no potentially irritating ingredients, no parabens, no glycerin, and it's made with things like aloe vera and chamomile. Go to astroglide.com to find out more, and you can also get a free sample there. Stay with us. We are going to talk about the post-marriage years of Bill Masters and Virginia Johnson, how the Showtime series came about, and we're going to dig into some more of the dirt here with the man himself who wrote the book on Masters and Johnson. So stay with us. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Enhance pleasure for you and the ones you love to love with Astroglide personal lubricants. Astroglide provides that extra oomph in creating a better and more exciting sexual experience. Astroglide's wide product range allows you to pick and choose based on personal preferences. All the products are also latex condom compatible, allowing for safer sex practices. Astroglide values the benefits of a fun and healthy sex life as part of a happier lifestyle, and so should you. For more information and a free sample, visit astroglide.com and get your sex life to blast off today.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. We're talking with Thomas Mayer, the author of Masters of Sex, The Life and Times of William Masters and Virginia Johnson, the couple who taught America how to love. Before the break, Masters and Johnson had gotten married, and, you know, The the ending is quite bittersweet. I mean, things at the very end still felt very unresolved for Virginia around Bill. It seemed like she didn't have closure. She still had really strong feelings about him. This kind of love-hate dynamic was in full effect. What do you attribute the failure of their partnership to? Why did it end?
Well, a lot of it has to do with ego and the feeling, I think, by Masters that he had been slowly eclipsed by Virginia Johnson. The person, you know, they started off as he was the boss and she was the lowly secretary. More and more she became his equal. And towards the end of their partnership, he was kind of falling apart because of his difficulties with Parkinson's and such. And Virginia Johnson was running everything. And, you know, a lot of the subtext of my book, arguably what the book is about love. And, you know, as much as the irony of these two sex experts who were so clueless about love, they were aware that it was a major part of the lives of the patients. They were very concerned about the messages that they were giving to America about sexuality and making sure that it never got divorced from love. But within their own relationship, a working relationship, a very modern relationship, they had a lot of difficulties expressing love to one another. And so at the end of the book, it kind of harkens back to the very beginning of the book, in which they both wind up going back looking for their lost loves of their youth. In the case of Bill Masters, he announces on Christmas Eve to Virginia Johnson, after the family has left their house, their children, you know, their grown children have left their house, that he's going to divorce her, and he's going to get married to his beloved Dodie. And Dodie is the sister of his old college roommate, who 50 years ago he wanted to get married to, and there was some lover's misunderstanding. And he winds up never getting married to Dodie, the beloved Dodie, but bumps into her almost 50 years later. And he announces to Virginia that he's going to leave her and go marry Dodie, which he does.
Which seems so crazy, because it's like this crazy romanticism from this really clinical kind of medical scientific guy. That's what's so amazing about that story. He's like, well, I'm going to go off and be romantic.
Yeah, but you know, I that was my initial response. But then when you think about some of the great things in literature, you know, I mentioned about Pygmalion before, written by George Bernard Shaw, but there's also the Proustian book of, you know, remembrances of things past. And in other words, you know, with the way that people romanticize and idealize their youth. And, yeah, I mean, think of all those high school reunions where people go to their high school reunions 20, 30 years later and looking to find the girl or the boy that they were in love with, and maybe somehow it will click. So, you know, Masters, who knows everything about human sexuality, he's the master of human sexuality and all of its clinical detail, is so clueless that he has this romanticized ideal that he'll go and get married to his beloved Dodie and everything will come full circle for him. And one of the biggest surprises, that's actually the biggest surprise for me in doing the research, is that Virginia Johnson goes looking for her lost love. At the very beginning of my book, she tells me how she lost her virginity at age 16 or so. She was living in a little small town in Missouri called Golden City, and she wouldn't even tell me the name of the boy. she would only mention the boy's name. She would only say that he was the boy with fiery red hair. She would never tell me his name. I eventually found out his name. His name was Gordon Garrett. And she didn't get married to Gordon Garrett because it was just before World War II, and she wanted to leave that the dust of that little small Missouri town behind. She wanted to go to the big city. She was destined for a stage. She thought she was going to be a singer, an opera singer. She was actually the girl singer in her second husband's jazz band before she met Masters. But it was really Masters who provided the big stage. She becomes internationally famous there. Ironically, she goes back looking for Gordon Garrett, the boy with fiery red hair. It turns out that when World War II came along, he became ultimately a spy, a secret part of the CIA eventually. He traveled all around the world. She had broken his heart. He never wound up getting married. And she goes back 50 years later after Masters has announced he's going to divorce her. She goes back looking for the boy with fiery red hair, and what happens to him is the ending of my book.
Well, and one of the beautiful ironies at the center of this story is that Masters and Johnson really lifted the veil on sex in America. I mean, they approached it with a kind of clarity and honesty that wasn't ever seen before that. And yet even Virginia Johnson described the two of them as the most secretive people of all time. Do you find that to be one of the most incredible paradoxes of this story?
Oh,
The secrecy definitely. And the honesty and the sort of dichotomy there?
Well, the thing that I think particularly speaks to today's audience is, 50 years ago, you couldn't use various different words, say, in a family newspaper. And in fact, it was Masters and Johnson's books that popularized the use of medical terms for human sexuality in both newspapers and, say, like women's magazines and such. You would never see conversations about sexuality with any type of clinical detail. It was Masters and Johnson that popularized the use and the conversation, the open conversation about sexuality in America, more so than anybody else. But the irony about it is that I think particularly for today's audience 50 years later, we seem to know everything, all the details about sexuality, but I think people are still very clueless about love. And one of the things that I think is really interesting about their relationship, it's a man and a woman who not only had this sexual relationship, but they were working together. And, their partnership does not start outside of work, but inside of work. And a good portion of the attraction, the initial attraction between Masters and Johnson, the spark, was the spark of creativity, as they're literally pioneers in this world of sexuality that people were afraid to explore. And so they were, it was both being very bold and courageous. They were eventually reaping the rewards for that, but it was all part of their love relationship as well. Ironically, they were not only secretive, but they had difficulties expressing love to one another, and yet they were crazy about one another, and they defined one another. I spoke to a Master's son. I interviewed him extensively for the book, and one of the things that he said was that it's like the old equation, 1 + 1 in their case did not equal 2. It was more than 3. It was more like 47. The two of them together were perfect complements. His weaknesses and strengths were complemented and dealt with her matching strengths. In other words, his weaknesses were her strengths and vice versa. And so together they were much more powerful than they would have been as individuals. And it was all part of their love equation, if you will.
Yeah, that's a fascinating piece of it too, is this notion that what attracted them to each other had this sexual component, which was clear, but there was also this sort of intellectual component and even a kind of an activist spirit. I mean, they both were. That's one of the fascinating things is that, you know, she grew up on a farm and he was kind of banished from his family at an early age and sent to a very prestigious boarding school. But how they came to be like two of the most forward-thinking, open-minded people in America during that time, like remains a little bit of a mystery. I mean, what do you attribute it to,
their incredible drive? That was not that much of a mystery to me because, you know, I know certainly among reporters who just really want to win a Pulitzer Prize one day. And in the world of science and medicine, to win a Nobel Prize, and, you know, it was very plausible to think that Masters would win a Nobel Prize for what he was attempting to do with the studies. So I think ambition was something that he was willing to risk his reputation, his career, his family. You know, and the more you know about the lives of, you know, people who are Nobel Prize winners and such, you know, they're people who often are very driven people. And they worked extremely hard. They worked 7 days a week, Masters and Johnson did. They sacrificed their family lives, both of them did, and it was a big part of what drove them towards this thing. It wasn't so much even, you know, a philosophical or a political thing. It was sheer ambition that was really the guiding light for them in most of their studies.
Okay, we're going to take another break. I want to dig into the Showtime series. So everyone, stay with us. And while you're listening to these great commercials, I also want to give a shout out to my fantastic sponsor, WeVibe. It is spring, finally here anyway in New York. And spring means dust off your old vibrator and get it out and maybe get yourself a new one. Go to WeVibe.com, see all of their product line. Everything they make is absolutely exceptional. So I think you should treat yourself for the spring, people. Stay with us. Coming up, more on The Masters of Sex with Thomas Mayer.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe. Share the pleasure.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
If You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today, I'm talking with Thomas Mayer, the author of Masters of Sex, the biography of William Masters and Virginia Johnson. Before we dive into Showtime, I do want to ask you about, you know, as their research progressed, they wrote this book on homosexuality, which later was revealed to possibly not, like, no one really knew where the research came from, and it was a little sketchy, and they talked about conversion therapy. They also wrote this really inflammatory book about AIDS. Both of them were serious missteps. And so by the time you get towards the end of the book, the whole thing seems like a cautionary tale. I mean, would you agree that it all went off the rails?
Yeah, it did. And, you know, there was a variety of reasons. With Virginia, as you mentioned, she really wasn't trained. She didn't even have a bachelor's degree. So she was not really equipped to run a lab. You know, Masters, as I mentioned, had Parkinson's disease. So things were just falling apart, and they never bequeathed their lab to the appropriate people. I think one of the things that has to be kept in mind, in all due respect to Masters and Johnson, was that Washington University never really adopted their work or embraced their work the way that, for instance, Indiana did with Kinsey, which has the Kinsey Institute and still carries on in his name. You know, Washington University really didn't do that. So it was unfortunate that their work essentially fell apart.
Now, when you were writing the book, did you ever have the notion that it would be a movie or that it could be made into a television series? I mean, how did the Showtime thing come about?
Well, I thought it would be a movie. I thought, you know, that it was something, I think most authors, if they write something, you know, that's very colorful like this, that's saying, oh, this could be a movie someday. What was interesting to me was after it was reviewed in the New York Times very favorably, and so we got a number of different offers almost immediately, and a few of them were from movie producers who made some pretty significant size movies. Sony Pictures, though, made us the offer of making it into a cable TV series, and Sarah Timberman is the executive producer, and she had been a book editor at Random House, and what she basically said to me was that a 2-hour movie would really not do their story over 40 years the type of justice that a long-term cable TV series would be about. And this was a time period in which Mad Men was just beginning, obviously The Sopranos, and this was the golden age of cable TV, said Sarah. And after speaking to my agent, you know, I thought long and hard about it, and I changed my mind from, instead of believing that it should be a movie, that I thought that television would be the right way. And it's been a wonderful dream come true. I think the Showtime network has been fantastic. David Nevins, who runs it, you couldn't ask for a better impresario in terms of producing the show. I think Michael Sheen has been brilliant as Dr. Masters. He's really been not afraid to be unlikable. I mean, Masters was not a particularly likable guy. He was a very tough nut to crack, and he was somebody who was very driven and used people, and Michael has not been afraid to be unlikable, and I think that's been really, really important. And I think Lizzie Kaplan, who plays Virginia Johnson, really captures Virginia Johnson's spirit, her kind of living by her wits, somebody who is trying to balance all the things in her life, and yet is also struck by work that they're doing. She shows a great talent for it. She's able to convince people to become part of their study. And I think Lizzie Kaplan's use of both humor and her great acting ability has been something that has been a big part of the success of the show.
And it seems like with such an in-depth biography, I mean, you've given them so much to chew on as actors. When you met them for the first time, did they even have any questions for you? Because there's a lot. There's a lot to go on in this book.
Oh, yeah. When they filmed the pilot here in New York, I was on the set. And I had conversations with both Michael and Lizzie about the character. I know that Lizzie's also listened to some of the tape-recorded interviews that I had with Virginia Johnson. And, you know, I've shared them with her. She's the only person, frankly, that I've allowed to listen to it. And she's been, she's got a sense of the way in which Virginia, her mind would think, and then the way she would speak and such. So, you know, it's been a lot of fun to see the Showtime series come to life. I think it's very true to the essence of my book. You know, my book is a nonfiction biography. Everything's on the record. The Showtime series, Masters of Sex, is a drama that uses my book as a springboard for the drama that is being created by Michelle Ashford. And I think she's done a wonderful job of interpreting it as a television drama. And I think, you know, she's squeezed a lot of the details from my book, but I also think she's been very true to the essence of the relationship with Masters and Johnson. And I think that's really the key to the success of both the book and now the TV show.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time and talking with us about it today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Thomas Mayer is the author of Masters of Sex, The Life and Times of William Masters and Virginia Johnson, the couple who taught America how to love. There is a new paperback version out from Basic Books with a new afterword by Thomas. And the second season of the Showtime series begins on July 13th. Find out more at thomasmayerbooks.com, M-A-I-E-R. Follow him on Twitter at thomasmayerbook, singular. All of these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. You can always find me at puckerup.com and on Twitter at Tristan Taramino. I want to give a special shout out to the Center for Sexual Pleasure and Health. They host monthly sex trivia nights in Providence, Rhode Island. And this month, May 22nd, a Thursday at 8 p.m., Sex Out Loud is proud to be chosen as the source for this month's trivia contest. So if you're in the Providence area, go to thecsph.org for more information. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett, Matt, my engineer, and Kevin on the board today, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, May 9th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when I will be celebrating two important milestones, my birthday and the 100th episode of Sex Out Loud. My guest will be none other than my mother. That's right, people. The woman who gave birth to me and raised me will be on the air with me live taking your calls. You do not want to miss that show, people. Until then, I encourage you to keep the discussion going on Facebook.com/AskTristan, on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, and in your own life, take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.